You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Welcome to Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to revisit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. I'm Julia, and I have watched 19 episodes today of Desperate Housewives. This is my first time through. I've watched plenty of trash TV, but I wouldn't call this even trash. When I started it, I was like, it's trash TV.
But now you're into it. Now you're invested.
Now this is like one of the best things I've ever done.
I'm Jordan, and this is not my first time watching it, but I am enjoying watching Julia experience everything for the first time.
Oh my gosh.
And man, oh man, there are details that I've forgotten. So it's been fun doing this rewatch.
It's been very fun. We watch on Hulu. Mm-hmm. You can watch on Amazon Prime as well. You can follow along. You don't have to. You can just listen to us talk about it. We delve into other subjects as well.
Yeah.
Last two episodes ago, we disputed the girl code. One episode ago.
This show brings up a lot of great topics for us to discuss. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't even debate whether it was fucked up to alter your wife's birth control, but that happened. There was a statutory rape this season. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what else did we debate? I mean, we debate the hotness levels of all the characters usually.
Yeah. And we talk about like the attraction level. Like, what do you do if your husband or partner is like super into someone or thinks someone else is super hot? Like, how do you handle that?
What do? You find your nanny just naked downstairs in the middle of the night?
No, it's brought up a lot of good like questions, like spanking other people's children.
Oh, yeah.
There's all kinds of little things that pop up throughout.
So we've had some fun. You can definitely listen and shoot us your opinions, shoot us questions. Interact with us on Instagram. Has been very popular for people. But we also have an email. We have a website. You can find us on all the platforms. We typically release on Mondays. Mm-hmm. And subscribe, follow, like, share. Talk about us in real life. Parties are back in action. I went to the club.
You did go to the club.
I went to the club twice.
I know. I've been to Vegas a couple times already.
Oh yeah. So it's, talk about us at the club, put up posters. I might put up posters in WeHo.
Yeah.
That would be great. But that's where we are. This episode we're watching season 1 episode 19, Live Alone and Like It.
Yep.
And I immediately resonate with the title because I live alone and I love
very,
it.
Very timely for us to be watching this
yes,
right now.
Yes, I live alone and I love it. I'm thinking about getting cats. And
I love how you've just already jumped to the plural. Thinking of getting cats.
It started as a cat.
A cat. But you know what? Need to. Because then they can keep each other company when you're not there.
A cat named Outlaw was going to be my plan. Mm-hmm. And then it became cats because there's always 2-for-1 deals.
Oh, yeah.
They're just giving away cats.
They're paying you to take cats at
this
point.
Yeah. I should find somewhere that does pay me to take a cat. I could use a couple bucks. But and then I ended up signing up for foster agencies. So that's, they can give you multiple at once. So now it's turned into cats and they're not going to be my own. They're just going to be.
You just watch them until they're adopted or ready.
Yeah. But I'll probably adopt one that I foster.
Yeah, for sure. It's like a trial run.
Yeah. So that's what's up with me. But yeah, Live Alone and Like It. Season 1, episode 19, what we're watching today. In episode 18. Really, we are going to run through that really fast. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to do Desperate Deed. And then we're going to do our full recap. And then we are going to do a Fuck, Marry, Kill, our favorite part. A housewife or a hubby of the week. We've expanded. And then we do a 5-star Apple rating about how we rate the episode on a scale of 1 to 5 apples. Mm-hmm. So that's what's going to go down today. Do you want to kick us off on where we were at in episode 18?
Yeah, for sure. So in episode 18 called Children Will Listen, we got to meet Susan's mother, who is a more manic, clumsy version of her. If you don't like Susan's antics, you're definitely not going to like her mom because she just is a million times whatever Susan is.
I am not a Sophie fan.
I'm not a Sophie fan either, but it makes sense why Susan's the way she is.
Everything fit. There's people like that in everybody's life that you meet their family and you're like, oh, shit. Like,
yeah. So Susan's mom shows up after breaking up with her boyfriend and who she claims hit her. But it sounds like they were both smacking each other, you know, throwing shit at each other. But yeah, that was pretty much the story that we got between those two. You know, Susan's mom is just...
Susan's mom's going through a breakup. Yeah. And she's like... She tells Susan this really casually, and she's like, it's over with me and Morty, and then eventually is like, so I'm gonna move in with you, and like drops that really casually.
Yeah, and Susan like panics because no, she does not want to have to take care of her mom. And it kind of turns into this story of like Susan realizing, like, as you get older, like your parents who parented you, you kind of have to parent them. And I'm like, well, maybe in your case, I don't know if that's everyone's case, because your mom is definitely in need of a fucking parent around. But
yeah,
And
then Susan tries to reconcile them, and they, like, get in a physically abusive fight in the parking lot of the pancake house that he owns.
So it kind of ended in a cliffhanger, I guess. So Sophie's not leaving yet.
Yeah, Susan was very confident giving a monologue about how she's like, you just need to fix things with your partner. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fine. Like, you know, you learn your lessons, and then in the background you see them fighting. So... yeah, we don't know really what's going to happen with Susan and Mama Bear.
Gabby got an offer from the hospital for a settlement in the previous episode. And she wasn't going to tell Carlos because she basically can't accept it until he's accepted his plea deal, because the government will take the money.
Because Gabby is a financial manager at this point. Because her husband is popping off with all of his money that he doesn't have.
Yeah, so he finds out about it and goes insane. And now he doesn't trust Gabby. And he's like, well, why should I go to jail? And she's like, well, because we won't get to keep the money if you don't, basically.
And also, you're guilty.
Yeah, also, like, you deserve it. Like,
also,
you're fucking
did slave labor.
Yeah, like,
what?
What the fuck? And so, basically, they have, like, a couple back and forths of, like, power struggles that culminates with Carlos physically forcing... like, violently forcing
Gabby.
It
looks very painful. Like,
yeah, to sign a post-nup.
He broke her wrist.
Yeah, he forces her to sign a post-nup, and that literally, unwittingly, he sends Gabby back into John's arms.
She runs back into his arms. She run jumps. There's this... I watch The Bachelor, but they have this phrase called a hooju, a hug jump, where you run up to a person and hug and jump them and wrap your legs around them.
Mm.
That's basically what Gabby did. She hugged her. She hoojued.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we leave Gabby and Carlos, with Carlos kind of having the upper hand. Basically, she thought she had the upper hand because she knew about his offshore bank accounts. She shouldn't have told him that, though, because then he just moved the money and all of her leverage is gone. So that's that on that. But it does mean that he is going to go to jail so she can get that settlement, or they can get that settlement to start over.
Yeah. I mean, she's doing this for them at this point.
Yeah.
And... with Lynette and Bree, their storylines were a little bit intertwined.
Yeah, so I'm going to let you take the reins on them.
Yeah, spanking, because we did talk about spanking, about the appropriate, like...
not fun spanking.
Not... I don't like being spanked to bed. I have the biggest butt ever, but I don't like it. Maybe once in a while, I don't hate it, but, like, I'm not, like...
Don't do it. No, someone will isolate the sound if you say it, and then it'll forever be haunted by audio of you saying what you're about to.
Yeah,
don't
I'll save
it.
That for just whoever meets me in the bedroom.
Yeah, save it.
No, so not fun spanking. Yeah, we debated because what I said, my mom, they did a little over the jeans tap when I was like 4, maybe. What's the appropriate amount of spanking for your child? Should you ever spank a child? Things have changed since the 90s, but I feel like it's very popular in the 90s. And basically, Lynette drops off her kids at Bree's house because she has to go do something. And that's on her. That's on her. She was in a rush. She dropped them off at Bree's. And Bree was getting pissed because they were being little hellions. And she said, if you do this, I'm going to spank you. And then Porter or Preston, like, did it. And she spanked them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you get video footage of it. It's over the jeans. She said, come here. And, like, just spanked him a couple times. And the other kids are their eyes are wide. Basically, after that, they go play poker. And it comes to light that Bree spanked her kids.
Mm-hmm.
And Lynette freaks the fuck out and is like, what are you talking about? You spanked my kids. And she's like, oh, well, I'm sorry. I didn't know I wasn't supposed to. It won't happen again. I feel like she came through there. Mm-hmm. Bree came through with a great apology. I said,
but then
it won't happen again.
Yeah, but then she, like, makes it weird by saying, like, well, we all know that your kids aren't the most well-behaved. It's like, why would you say that in this moment? Maybe wait till Lynette's not furious?
Yeah. Maybe wait. Maybe wait.
Like, oh, my God.
So then Lynette's like, well, at least I don't have to send my kid to prison camp.
Yeah, basically calls her a bad mom.
Yeah, and so Bree spends a lot of the episode debating whether she's a good mom or not, and it culminates in a visit to Camp Hennessey.
Hey.
And then they go and visit, and Bree is, like, listening to these moms who are, like, drug addicts and shit, like, talk about, like, just being bad moms, basically. And she's like, I'm not like that. And I, like, refuse to be seen like that. And mm-hmm. she is like, I have to go tell Andrew right now that this is, like, I'm not a bad mom. I won't be known as a bad mom. And she goes and rushes in because he's talking with Rex privately. And she's like, I'm not a bad mom. And Rex is like, calm down. Andrew just told me he might be gay. And she just shuts the fuck up after that. She's like, oh, my gosh. So that's what happens there. And then the next day she goes to grab her mail and she sees Lynette from across the street. Because meanwhile, Lynette is talking with Tom about the spanking, losing her mind. And she's like, we are good parents and, like, our discipline method works. And Tom is like, really? You always say you're going to spank them and then you never do, and they're smart kids. So they, like, know it's not going to happen. So Lynette is also dealing with the fact that when she was young, she, like, had the shit beaten out of her by her parents, and she doesn't want to hit her kids for that reason or spank them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they start fucking with her one day and she is losing her mind and she says, I'm going to, and she stops herself. Send you over to Bree's, and you know how Bree disciplines you. Mm-hmm. And the kids straighten up super fast. And then they have this mailbox scene where Bree and Lynette make eyes. And then they make up, basically. And they say, sorry, you know, do you want to go in and talk shit about our kids? And it was a wholesome moment. I really liked this episode because it was – the theme was on point for most of it besides Gabby. But we saw a lot of good friendship moments. We had a good debate about spanking. It, all in all, was amazing. So, yeah, that's where we were.
Yeah, it was a great discussion.
And we were left with a couple cliffhangers, like Sophie. Mm-hmm. We didn't really see Edie or Paul or anything. Oh, we did see Zach and Felicia have a moment. Zach's real name was Dana.
Mm-hmm.
And Felicia
knew him as a baby.
Yeah. So they go way back. They're day one.
Yeah.
So that did happen. But all in all, fulfilling episode.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have a desperate deed ready? I have some. I've been storing them up as everything, as life is, as nature is healing.
Yeah, I can go first. I can jump right in. My desperate deed. There was a night that Julia and I went out with some friends and we got fucking shit-faced, like, destroyed.
My desperate deed was about to be about this night, too.
Really? Yeah. The Christmas one?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So we went out to go to this Christmas pop-up bar, and then we ended up at another bar, and then we ended up in West Hollywood at a bunch of bars. And if you know anything about West Hollywood, the drinks are strong. And the dancing's popping, and all of a sudden you're fucked up at 2 a.m. So I don't think any of us intended for this night to get as crazy as it did. But I had to be at work the next day. And I was sick as a dog. Sick as a dog. Could not keep anything down. Anything. I had to pull over twice driving to work to vomit. Sickening. It was awful. I get to work, puked a couple times in my trash can. Couldn't keep water, Gatorade, nothing down. The supervisor for the day, so I couldn't leave early. I was, like, begging my boss. And she's like, no, and she wasn't, because she wasn't there. So I looked at my employees, and I told them, like, this was my desperate attempt to salvage myself for the day. I was like, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to nap in the corner, and if anybody comes in, you're going to cover for me or wake me up or make sure that nothing bad happens. but we all get one. I'm like, we all get one day like this. And this was my desperate attempt to prevent myself from getting in trouble at work. And by bribing my employees with their own hangover, shit face, throw up under your desk days, if they let me get by with this one. And that was my desperate deed. Wasn't until about 6 p.m. that I could keep water down.
I don't think it was till like Monday morning that I could keep water down. I just like am thinking because we talk about this night all the time.
It's like infamous.
Because it was so brutal.
It was horrible. The hangover we got, I've never... And then we were just sick for like a week. It's like we got the flu or COVID or something. Like
I got sick twice.
It was horrible.
It was, oh my God. That night... Yeah, my desperate deed. There was a lot of desperate deeds. Yeah, I've been thinking about that too. We've been talking about it. But in my memory, like people are always like, they get so hungover and they're like, I'm never going to drink again. Like I literally didn't drink for like 6 months. My desperate deed is that I didn't drink for like 6 months after
You're
that.
You're like, night. My body needs to recover.
I was so bad. And that's like in my mind, that is the worst hangover that I've ever had because my body... I typically will throw up a day. If I drink too much, I'll throw up the next day. Mm-hmm. I'll throw up like once or twice and be like, cool. Mm-hmm. Like after my birthday this past year, I threw up once. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, cool. I'm going to drive home for 2 hours now. I'm good. Like,
yeah.
But this day, I lost my phone. I didn't lose my phone. So we went on West Hollywood, which is also infamous for having your phone stolen.
Yeah.
Which is desperate in itself. Fuck the people who steal the phones there.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is.
My friend got her phone stolen like this past Friday. And we were like, it's the second night that WeHo has been back. And people are already back on their bullshit of stealing phones.
People are. People are always on their bullshit is what I'm learning.
Yeah, they really are. And yeah, I was dancing. There was like a video that Jordan posted and I'm like phone in hand there, but my phone is stolen. And so the next day I am also in a lot of pain, just as much pain as Jordan. And I'm like sitting in my bed and I'm like, what do I do? Like, cause I can't function. There were like no thoughts besides like feeling naked and afraid without my phone. And then I start throwing up. I start my throw up. I'm like, okay, twice will be fine. No, I throw up like 5 times that day. I also can't keep down water. I don't even know if I got to the store to get Gatorade because I think that was too much work. My roommate, and you can hear everything in this apartment. I never fucked a single person when my roommates were there because I was too nervous about it. And they're watching, he invites two of his friends over. They're watching a movie in our living room. And I am meanwhile throwing up nothing because there's nothing in my stomach, throwing up repeatedly, laying on my bathroom floor, like cuddling my toilet. And I'm sure that they can hear me. And I eventually get back in my bed and I text my aunt. Well, first of all, I'm like, who do I text? Because Jordan is far away, hungover and at work. I decide that I need to go to the emergency room. That's what's going to happen. Urgent care because I can't keep water down. And I just call my aunt who, she drinks a lot too. And she's like, you'll be fine. Just wait it out. And then I did do that. I ended up being fine after throwing up all day. And then I, with the most shame I've ever had, walk myself to the Apple store eventually that night. And, buy myself a new phone, $600 I didn't want to spend, still paying it off to this day. Still, this was 2 years ago. Still paying this phone is the phone that I bought in shame. So
shame purchase, shame phone.
Oh my goodness. So yes, the desperate deed is that I almost went to urgent care and I was going through my phone book on my computer because I didn't have a phone. I'm like going through my recent texts. I'm like, which one of these bitches can take me to urgent care right now? And then I stopped drinking for 6 months. So, but now I'm back on my bullshit, so.
Well.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Going on.
It all comes around. It comes back around.
Yeah, it comes back around. So, with that, we hope you're ready. I don't know. None of these girls seem to drink too much, besides Susan when she's sad.
No, none of them do.
So, I'd be interested to have a character.
Not yet.
I'm interested to have it. Yeah, they just abuse prescription medication.
Yeah. True. Facts.
Yes. But we're going to go dive into the episode. We're really excited. Season 1, episode 19, Live Alone and Like It. And as always, watch safely. Buckle up.
Buckle up.
Season 1, episode 19, Live Alone and Like It. Lynette saves Mrs. McCluskey's life, but finds herself wishing she hadn't. A revolving door of men now come through Susan's home while Sophie is staying with her. After coming home from Camp Hennessey, Andrew has a plan in mind. Money becomes an issue for Gabby when Carlos cuts her off. She ends up getting creative.
Okay, now that we've finished watching the episode, I can't hold it in until the end.
Okay.
I'm gonna fuck, marry, and kill Andrew.
Okay, that's an interesting choice. I'm interested to see if we discuss this episode, how you feel at the end, if you still feel that way.
And I changed my mind.
I don't have my choices yet, though, so it's possible I could align with you. I don't know.
Maybe. I might be overlooking all the other characters, but that's how much Andrew shined in this episode.
Andrew did shine. They gave him some really great dialogue. That monologue, he must have had so much fun. As an actor.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
I kind of like want to meet this guy.
I know.
Should we DM Sean him? I'm really obsessed with him.
I know. We should DM him.
He had good hair in this episode too, I noticed. As good of hair as you can have with that haircut. But yeah, his mom kept like adjusting it and I couldn't help but notice. And I'm like, he's looking really good. For some reason.
Maybe you like them bad boys. You're like, as he gets more and more evil,
I do. I was talking in the car with my friend yesterday, and I was like, I think I just like being miserable sometimes.
No.
I was like, love it when they're like sociopaths.
You're like, that's my type.
Yeah, we talked about a guy that I dated a long time ago, and my friend knew him, and he was like, yeah, I think that guy's a murderer. Like, I for real think that guy, if he said it in the best way possible, he's like, I think, you know, if the situation was different with like him growing up, he would have definitely been a murderer, you know, if he had a really fucked up family life.
And
I
was like, shit.
I was like, you're right. And I was like, remember those two other people he was friends with? He's like, yeah, they all had that energy that they would like cover up each other's like murders.
And okay, but like goals.
I know.
Surround yourself with people that would murder with you. I mean,
either way, I think I like the bad boys, and I was feeling Andrew this episode.
Oh, man.
But this episode had more, I think the word is inauspicious beginnings.
Yeah.
It might be, yeah. So it starts with Lynette. And I like when we start with Lynette, when Mary Alice Young zooms in and talks about Lynn.
Yeah.
She says, every morning Lynette went to take out her trash, and she would indulge in this little daydream, which is also a fucked up daydream we're about to get into.
I know, it's kind of weird.
She daydreams that her neighbor will die. That's not the most fucked up part, I don't think. The most fucked up part is that after her neighbor dies, the people who take her place in that house, and we're talking about Mrs. McCluskey here, Mrs. McCluskey, who took an egg to the face.
Mm-hmm.
And after Mrs. McCluskey dies in Lynette's daydream, a family, a Swedish family specifically.
Gotta have that blonde hair. Natural blondes.
I know.
Just like Lynette.
Yeah. I was like, okay, weird. Made me uncomfortable. And then they have twins as well. They become great friends. They grow up. And then their twins marry her twins because it would be two female twins. And they have a big wedding that she doesn't have to pay for.
Yeah.
That's her dream. That's her daydream.
She just wants to raise her sons good enough that they'll find wives so she doesn't have to take care of them anymore.
Yeah.
Seems to be the goal.
I'm like, my daydreams, I don't even know what I daydream. I don't even know if I daydream, but it's certainly not like, wish my neighbor would die and I would have like a perfect life because of this.
Yeah.
So I'm like, whoa, Lynette's really bored, I guess.
Yeah. Or she's just fucking miserable.
Yeah. So Lynette snapped back to reality because Mrs. McCluskey is grabbing her trash cans and she's just like, why are you stealing those? And Mrs. McCluskey is, I love this. I love her. I love this character.
Me too. I love Mrs. McCluskey.
It's like, I assumed you didn't want them because trash day was 2 days ago and you left them out. And I'm like, This is everything I want to be when I'm older. Mm-hmm. This is it. Like,
yeah.
And Lynette's like, no, just like calm down. And then she insults the color of Lynette's house. And she says that she doesn't want to stare at the cans. And then Lynette claps back. I'm like, slaps back. Mm-hmm. Lynette claps back and says, hire a gardener to fix up the jungle you call lawn. So they're getting into it. And as Mrs. McCluskey is walking back over to her house, she literally keels over, like Lynette daydreams.
Yeah, and Lynette like legitimately debates whether or not she should help her.
Yeah, and then Lynette, before that, Lynette says, I hope you go to hell. So, or what does she say? Oh, you should go to a nursing home run by Germans as well. Was an insult that was thrown. So there were some insults. But, yeah, she calls 911, does the right thing.
And yeah, actually does the right thing, even though it seems iffy for a second.
Yeah.
And, like, Miss McCluskey, like, asks her to go with her, and Lynette's like, no. But then she finally feels bad and goes. Because, like, yeah, at the end of the day, like, as much as we gripe about Lynette, she's not a bad person. She's
just, no.
Low-key, I honestly feel like, sadly, I would probably be more like her than any other character.
Really?
Yeah, because I think she's the most real.
Because she's a Miranda.
She is a Miranda. But she's also, like, she's real. Like, she's a bitch sometimes, and I feel like that's realistic. Like, people are not nice. People do awful things. Like the daydream about her neighbor dying because she hates her. I've daydreamed that some, like, coworker, some asshole coworker died before. I'm like, wow, and then I'd never have to deal with them again. It's dark, but.
I have never done that, Jordan. I have never done that. Like,
You're like, all right, so Jordan's a psychopath. That's what we learned today.
I do that all the time.
Yeah, so I feel like Lynette speaks to, like, those darker impulses, and the other characters are not realistic in that way.
Yeah.
Like, Gabby and Lynette to me are the most flawed, like, realistically.
Yeah, realistically flawed people.
Whereas Brie and Susan's issues are, like, less relatable, in my opinion. Like, Susan's such a hopeless romantic.
Susan's pretty pathetic.
Like, she's pretty
there
pathetic.
There are moments that I relate, but I'm also, she's, like, to the nth level. Like,
I feel like I don't like Lynette because I feel like I'm like her, if that makes sense. I've always joked that I would never, like, I would never be friends with myself.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never heard you joke that, but that.
I was telling Andrew the other day, like, I would never date me. Like, I could never date someone just like me.
I'm looking for someone just like
me. No, I would never. I'm, like, I'm annoying, man. I don't want to deal with another one of me.
I want a mirror. I want them to look like me. No. I want them to be like me.
I mean, yeah, no.
And I date the total opposite.
No, and my boyfriend are very different. And I was like, I like that, though, because he doesn't have the qualities that annoy me about myself.
Yeah.
Which, like, because, yeah, there are certain things where I'm like, I would not deal with me.
Dang. No, I'm always like, how much are they like me? I'm like, are my friends exactly like me? Like, can they be more like me? But in reality, if I found somebody exactly like me, I'd probably hate them. Because I would be, like, competitive about it.
Yeah, like, and, like, I don't know. I like to be, I'm a little bit of a brat. Got that only child brat thing going. I don't want to deal with another brat.
Dang, you've thought it out.
Yeah. Like, no, I want to be the baby. Like, I'm the baby.
I do have this thing where I date, like, a lot of younger, not younger men, but, like, baby. Like, baby in the family. Like, because I'm the baby. And I've noticed that I've repeatedly dated babies in their family. Like, where we're all the youngest. They'll be the youngest sibling, too. And I'm like, oh, this is a problem. This is a problem.
Maybe that's interesting, though.
Maybe this is why it doesn't work out a lot for me.
Interesting.
I do need a lot of attention.
Maybe you need to find someone that's got more, like, that caretaker vibe.
Yeah.
Because that's what I need. Yeah. I need someone that's willing to, you know, not all the time, but will baby me occasionally. Because I like that.
I just need constant attention.
Yeah, me too.
Like constant.
No, me too. No, like, it's, I'm like a little psychopath. That's why I couldn't deal with me.
Sorry, this is more.
Sorry, so everybody, you're getting a real deep dive, like, into our psyches.
Yeah, because I'm just learning. I don't think we've ever talked about this before.
No, in a relationship, I like to be babied, and it's probably not healthy, but at least I recognize it. I don't fucking know. I like it a little bit.
I want to be babied when I want to be babied.
Yeah,
but
me too.
They have to figure, they have the undoable task of figuring out when I want that before I know that I want it.
That's true. No, I mean, I'm the same way.
That's how psycho I am.
Like, no.
I'm like, can you read my emotions better than me? Because otherwise we can't be together.
You're like, one day you're like, I want to be babied. They try to do it the next day. You're like, leave me the fuck
alone.
Yeah,
I'm like, can you stop touching me? Yeah. Like, can you get the fuck away?
I like attention. I like to be the center of it. But not in a group setting, just like one-on-one.
Yeah, one-on-one. Like, and I could do group setting, too.
See, that stresses me out. But I'm like, my poor boyfriend. I'm like, you need to just focus on me at all times.
Yeah. My poor future boyfriend. Sorry. Miss McCluskey says she doesn't want to die alone with strangers. Lynette goes with her. I agree. I wouldn't want to die with a bunch of strangers. Yeah. And after that, Mary Alice goes into a little baby monologue. She says, we go to our intro and then we come back. And she says, life is a journey, one much better traveled with a companion by our side. But we sometimes lose our companions along the way and our journey becomes unbearable. And I was like, dang, that cuts deep.
It does.
That is like all about grief almost to me. That reads very grief stricken. But then we cut to Mike. So I guess we can kick off with Susan because Mike has quite a story and his boss has quite a story. And one of our mysteries that has been haunting us since episode one is solved. Mike is at the cemetery with his boss / Deidre's dad.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman in the chest, the toy chest, that was buried under Paul's pool that mm-hmm. he fixed in record time, which was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
An incredible act of strength.
He might be a construction manager or some shit. Yeah, we don't know what he does for a living. Does.
But the body in the trunk was Deidre. And it was very sad. It had been decomposed over, I think, 15 years. She's been dead 15 years. They ID'd her only from her dental records. And I said, guess Mike's job is done. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it, but
yeah, it was chilling. It was very SVU like. This mm-hmm. guy is crying at the cemetery and he says, I have to bury my baby and I'm here just touring tombstones. And I was like, is that a thing that happens? Mike is compassionate. He says, you should go home. You shouldn't be doing this. And he's like, I'm not done. You have a cop you should talk to. His name's Sullivan. I paid him to take the heat off you. He's going to get you all the details and you're going to like murder somebody.
Yeah,
basically. And I was like, yes, this is what I live for. So that's where we leave Mike temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
Then we catch up with Susan and she's hanging with Lynette and the kids and there's an ice cream truck and all the kids are pissed off because they can't get ice cream. The twins specifically. They're mm-hmm. like, the line isn't moving. And Susan's like, what's happening? And Sophie has her like tits hanging over the thing. You know, you've done the move at the bar where you're like,
you lean in. You lean really far.
Like squeeze and lean and mm-hmm. you do it. So she's doing that with the ice cream man who is gross. And she's flirting with him and Susan's like, fucking stop.
Yeah, she's like, please, mom.
Yeah,
please.
Her mom is trying to sell it. Hector, he teaches salsa at the community center and he's like, I give private lessons. And I was like, ugh. And Susan loses it a little bit and Sophie tries to defend herself. She's like, it's called moving on with your life. Like, you're such a stick in the mud.
Yeah.
Why can't you be more fun? We can go to the clubs tonight. I'll say I'm 42 and you can say you're 28. And I do like her energy, but
yeah.
Not if that was my mom, I'd be mad too. I like that energy for like a girlfriend.
I think I would like that energy more. Yeah. Not if it's your mom and not if you're also going through a heartbreak.
Yeah, not if you're devastated over the man that you thought was the love of your life and you have that friend that's like, let's get fucking laid. And you're like,
I don't want to touch another man ever again.
Don't even want to be around myself right now. So that's what's going on. Susan is like, you just broke up with Morty. Can't you pretend to mourn the relationship? I think this is about like a fault on Susan because everybody moves on at their own pace, and if this is what she wants to do, just let her do it.
I think they're both trying to force each other to mourn their relationships the way they do it.
Yeah.
And I think it's going both ways. And instead of just Susan expressing to her mom, like, no, I am depressed. Like, I don't want to do this. She's instead telling her mom that her mom's in the wrong.
Yeah.
And her mom's doing the same thing.
Yeah. And that's kind of what's happening.
They're just, like, they're not respecting each other and, like, they're styles of moving on. I think for Susan though, she's a little more annoyed because it sounds like this was her entire life was guys rotating in and out. So for her, I think that's probably her frustration in this scene. But I do feel like, okay, well, you're not a child. Like, your mom can do whatever she wants now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I get that if maybe Susan was if it was like Julie, Julie's age, I'd be like, yeah, like I'd be pissed at my mom too.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, your mom's what, 60? Like, let her fuck.
Yeah.
She's trying to fuck. She's in her 50s or whatever. I don't know, because she was like a teen pregnancy situation.
But I think that they are both kind of butting heads over their style of getting over things. But the long term, having to deal with that your whole life. I mean, mostly be pissed she held up the ice cream line for all the kids. Mm-hmm. Be pissed about that. Yeah. So Next thing we see, Susan is body goals as she walks down the stairs in her underwear.
She's got such an insane body.
Her body is crazy. She's so, like, skinny. Just that, like, heroin chic.
I know. I'm trying to lose some weight and get fit, and I'm just going to put pictures of her everywhere.
I think I need to as well. I mean, I don't need to, but I want to look like her.
Yeah.
And I like my body. I just want to look like her.
Yeah.
So she comes down her underwear. Her mom is just getting a back rub from some dude.
From some, like, schmuck. I'm like, all Sophie, guys, at least pick, like, a not ugly-ass motherfucker.
Casting agents did great on this episode. Casting
they
agents.
They found the swarmiest-looking motherfuckers.
They went buck wild.
They
did.
They popped off.
So he's getting a back rub from some gross dude.
Like, the grossest, like...
He was so gross. His name is Tim, and she's like, sorry, we startled you. And Sue's just like, what the fuck?
When he looks, like, swollen and just, like, gross. And his smile's like creepy. He's like, ugh.
He looks like he pounded, like 10 IPAs.
Yes. The man looks flushed. Flushed.
It's hot in that house. That's why Susan's sleeping in her underwear. He's hot and bothered. And they get in a fight about this because it is Susan's house. And
she does have a teenage daughter. You don't need to bring strange, especially guys that look this fucking creepy.
He was a fucking creep. He looks like a truck. Okay, not all truckers are creeps, but like, you stop at a rest station. Like,
he looks like a guy that would get busted at like a porn theater for like masturbating, like just openly.
The most accurate yet.
That's really, I'm sorry for that visual, everybody, but it's gross.
Like, he's a perfect mugshot person.
Yes. Like, he's a living mugshot. Living mugshot. That's it. Nailed it.
So Sophie has, like, great taste.
Terrible.
So, yeah, Sophie's talking about her night. They danced, and he dipped me. He ordered me a dirty volcano, and I'm like, that sounds like a sexual act, but... They end up going to talk, her and Susan in the corner, because Susan is pissed, rightfully so, like we've said. And Susan's like, get him the fuck out of my house. It's 1 a.m. And yeah. Like, no. And Sophie is not agreeing to this. She is just like, no, what's the big deal? And Susan says, if you don't fucking make him leave, I'm going to tell him how old you are. And Sophie pulls it together real fast.
Yeah, she does.
So she goes and she pretends to yawn. She's like, oh, I'm so tired. It's time for you to leave. And I was like, yes, Susan. Susan smirks and smiles. So that's what goes on there. We then switch back to Mike. Mike's in a foggy parking garage. Don't know where it's at, but I noted the fog. And Sullivan, that one cop, is there. And he's like, Delfino. They meet and he hands over the file on Deidre. And Mike is trying to, like, chat him up. He's like, so you got some leads, right? And this cop is giving him the ultimate cop energy of just fucking being annoying and horrible.
Yeah, he's, like, being a dick to him because he's like, you're a cop killer. It's like, okay, well, you're literally...
So Mike killed a cop.
Apparently.
Yeah, they did say cop killer. I noticed that.
But, like, this guy, like, is shaming Mike while simultaneously getting paid off. You're just, like...
committing a crime.
Like, you're the same. Like... What are you... Okay.
Yeah, the guy's pissed. He says, I'm handing over this confidential report to a killer and a drug dealer. And I said, stop making Mike sound so hot to me. And he said, like, basically, is this what our justice system has come to? Guys like you walking around without a care in the world. And Mike is like, it was so long ago. Like, I did my time. Whatever. Thanks for the report. And I'm no longer a murder suspect because of you. Like, you got paid off. Just curious, how much does it cost to buy off a homicide detective? And he starts to walk away. That was going to be Mike's mic drop. And this detective is like, hey, Delfino, one more thing. And fucking pistol whips him.
Does he pistol whip him or does he... it looks like he almost takes out like brass knuckles or some shit.
I don't know. He pistol whipped him at least once later in the fight. But
yeah. It's not even a fight. He sucker punches him. Mike's on the ground. He just starts kicking and hitting him.
Yeah. Mike gets the shit beaten out of him in a way that he has not yet.
Yeah.
It was honestly so brutal. That's that. Basically, that's when the other guy, Sullivan, says, get one less cop killer off the street if I hear anything about this file around. And I was kind of turned on by the whole thing. But Susan, next thing we know, Susan comes home and Sophie is like really excited to meet her. And she said, I know you've been furious with me. Men have been coming like, in at me left and right, in and out of this house. Mm-hmm. And, like, I just throw it in your face, and I'd hate me, too. I'm just trying to have fun, and I want to include you in the fun. That's immediately the worst thing you ever want to hear.
Sophie's just, like, missing the point.
So she says, Tim's over here and he bought a friend for you. And Susan hates everything in her life. They're going on a double date.
Yeah, Susan's like, this is not it. This ain't it, sis. Like, you get to see, like, the dread in her fucking face.
She says, Tim had a friend at the box factory. And I'm like, that's where this guy works. Like,
what does that even mean?
I don't know.
The box factory?
Where do they make boxes? I guess there has to be a box factory. I don't know where they make them. Susan says she's not down. Basically, Sophie's like, I can't cancel. And, like, they go inside. And the dudes are literally already on the couch drinking schnapps.
The guy's name is Lamont.
I know, the wildest
Lamont
name. I wrote it down. I said, Lamont is the craziest name.
No offense to people named Lamont, but hard pass on Lamont.
Lamont.
That just sounds like a creep. I'm sorry. My boy Lamont.
What if I came home with a boy named Lamont? I said, Jordan, I'm so excited for you to meet my boyfriend.
His name is
Lamont.
White guy that works at a box factory named Lamont.
And he brings a bottle of schnapps to our hangout.
Peppermint schnapps is seasonal. It only belongs in
winter.
Wintertime themed drinks, okay? You don't just drink peppermint schnapps.
It was the first thing I ever got fucked up off of in my entire life.
One time, me and my friend, she and I were in Disney, and we started our day with peppermint schnapps in our coffee.
Oh, okay.
That was good.
But it was hopefully December 1st.
I don't even remember. I think it was leftover schnapps I had from a Christmas party, though.
Yeah, but so we were, like, 21, probably.
No one was buying it.
Yeah.
We didn't buy it. Also, I just had it from a Christmas party.
If you're an adult, it's a winter drink. If you are 21 and under, it's okay to drink anytime. Because you're 21 and under, and you're like, a peppermint schnapps.
When you're under 20, or if you're 21 and under, you're just trying to get fucked up on whatever you can get your hands on. So that's fair. You're right. But unless you're buying it for an event, for a Christmas-themed event or a winter-themed event, that's weird.
If this dude, oh my God, I don't know if that would be like a badass move or a lame-ass move. If I'm hanging out with a dude, not if he looks like this Lamont was gross.
Yeah.
But if he was like a hot dude named Lamont and he brought peppermint schnapps, I don't know if I'd be like, that's kind of funny. I don't know.
If there was an irony to it,
if
fine.
He
but
apologized,
this guy, this is like a genuine, like,
yeah,
this guy, is just who this guy is.
This is like his drink of choice.
And I don't even feel bad because the show literally wrote that he brought it to make us think that he's gross. Yeah, so I'm like, you know what? Mark Cherry's fault, not
mine.
They
were in the writer's room and they're like, what can he bring?
That's like the douchiest shit.
That's going to signal that he's just the worst.
Schnapps,
no,
man.
If the guy, okay, it would only work if the guy, like, apologized first. And he's like, sorry, this is really all I had. Or, like, he made a joke about it. Then he could bring over peppermint schnapps at the age of 28.
Yeah.
Maybe. And his name could not be Lamont. There's a lot of moving parts. Yeah, so they hang out. I can't believe Susan even lets them hang out. They hang out. Like,
yeah.
And Sophie and Tim are, like, fucking in front of them.
Like, dude, Sophie's wild for this, too. They're, like, bringing two strange guys into her home. Like, what the fuck, Sophie? What is you doing? Like, you're a single woman. There's a teenage girl upstairs. Like, you're putting her life in danger. Yeah, sorry, but these people are creepy.
Because these guys are walking mugshots. Like, so the dude, like, okay, and then Lamont tries to talk to Susan. And it's the funniest thing. He says, so children's books, right? And she's like, yes. And he says, you're lucky. Not everyone gets to realize their bliss. And he's like, come join me. And he pats the seat.
No, everything about it is awful.
And Susan has boundaries, though, and is like, no, thanks. And then she's just had it, and she freaks out at Tim. She's like, stop fucking tickling my mom. She's ticklish. We get it. Stop.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, it's getting late. You guys have to go. And Sophie's like, you haven't finished your drink. And Susan takes the shot, which I'm like, dang, girl, okay. And
proud of her.
They start, like, walking out. They end up being like, let's go hit the casino or wherever they're going. And Susan's like, mom, you don't even know these guys. You're going to go with them.
Yeah.
And as they're outside, Susan, like, freaks out at her mom. And Lamont Well, also I noticed that she said, as they're walking out, Susan's like, good luck with your inventions, Lamont.
Yeah.
So I get the impression that he's a little bit of an entrepreneur.
Yeah, he's a psycho.
Yeah. And so as they're outside, she freaks out. And Sophie's like, I have good taste. And she's like, Mom, you've been married 4 times. And this is embarrassing. You need to stop this. Lamont tries to side with Susan because he thinks he's going to get laid. He's like, you're right.
Susan's like, bitch, you ain't getting laid. Just give it up.
Yeah. Like, give it up. Yeah. So they get in a fight and Susan just basically explains that she's not over Mike. She says, you know, you have lots of ones. Like, you move on to the next one. And, like, I have one and I'm devastated over it. I'm not just depressed. And, like, I actually almost nearly cried because I thought it was a good monologue. And I was like,
I think it's a really beautiful moment for and vulnerable for Susan. Like, none of us like to admit that we're heartbroken when we're heartbroken because it's hard to give the other person that satisfaction.
Yeah.
Or, like, to let, even in your own mind, right? And I like that scene because I think, like, it's very real. Like, yeah, Susan is fucking hurt and she needs time and she's depressed.
Yeah.
And, like, her mom is making it worse.
And I, like, know that heartbreak. And sometimes you don't even want to admit it to your, like, friends with family when it's been a minute. It's been a couple months and you're like, I just still feel like shit. And, like, somebody's trying to help you move on and you're trying to move on. Like, I feel Susan and I see her in this moment because I'm like, oof, I feel it in my gut.
Like, yeah, and Susan's, like, she gets sad because she basically says, like, you can move on, like, I just can't, and that's driving me insane.
Yeah.
And so she admits that she's, like, frustrated with her mom, but not because, like, of what her mom's doing. It's more what it represents that Susan can't do.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to watch.
Yeah,
but they don't really have, like, a solution after this. That's where it really drops off. And then we do catch up with Mike one last time. It's, oh, okay, well, the solution is that Sophie goes over to Mike's house.
Yeah, she tries to talk to Mike, and it's just like, Susan loves you, like, I need you to, which, Mike's not the problem here. It's not like Mike hasn't been trying, you know what I mean?
Mike tried a million times,
like,
yeah.
Talk to your daughter, like, she's the one that's holding this up, not Mike.
And also, Mike, he's looking busted because he got pistol whipped the night before,
yeah.
And he literally has, like, the ultimate, like, dude response. He said, wow, okay. She loves me. And Sophie's like, she misses you so much. And he's like, I literally just can't deal with this right now. He says, I just found out about the death of someone close to me. And, like, I can't think about this. And then he goes inside and, like, looks at all of the, like, dead pictures of the dead body of Deidre. And I'm like, that is fucked up.
Yeah, he's, like, reading, like, the police report, making himself crazy.
Yeah, so that shit is where, that's where that shit happens. And that's where we leave off. So That's all I'm at. But it was a great storyline, actually, now that we've recapped it.
Yeah.
I really felt like it peaked when they have their argument for me. And that's when I was, like, stopped being annoyed with Sophie.
Yeah, she was a lot more, like, relatable once that happened.
Should we roll into Lynette's storyline?
Yeah.
It's a bit shorter, but it's meaty this week. It's not a disappointing Lynette storyline.
No, we actually got a pretty good storyline from Lynette.
After the thing with Mrs. McCluskey, Mrs. McCluskey comes to pay Lynette a visit. She's like, I OD'd on my arthritis medication. You'll find out about that one day. She's so cute. I love Mrs. McCluskey. And she gives her this old Tiffany's lamp and is like, here, you know, thanks for letting me not die. It's like very like,
She just can't. She just is a crabby old lady.
Yeah,
she's not mean, but she's not nice.
She doesn't know how to like say things, what she means. And so she's like saying thank you by giving her this lamp. And Lynette is like, I like, thank you.
Yeah.
I'll figure it out. And then there's like this awkward moment and Mrs. McCluskey hugs Lynette and it's so awkward. And then Lynette's like, I'd invite you in, but I'm like really busy. And then Mrs. McCluskey just like walks in and they end up talking for a couple hours.
Yeah.
It's like typical like old person shit. Like, then a day or so later, Lynette's on the phone sounding super busy and she's like on her way out the door. And then Mrs. McCluskey is there with like avocados.
Which, fuck yeah, I want someone to give me a basket of avocados.
I know. My grandma probably would.
I know.
She'd be like, you'd be walking out the door. She'd be like, do you want these?
You're she's
like,
always trying to feed me.
She literally is always trying to feed everybody.
Yeah. I'm like, oh shit.
So, yeah, she's. Says, I have a tree, but I hate them. And then she says, you can make some guacamole.
Yeah, she's like, you seem like the kind of person to eat guacamole.
I was like, ah. This Midwestern lady. And so And Lynette's like, I'm on my way out the door. She's like, well, you can make a batch right now. And Lynette's like, I can't. And then Mrs. McCluskey's like trying to hang with Lynette, basically. She's like,
it's like sad, lonely old person stuff. I'm like, man, it kind of breaks my heart.
I know. I think I need to like volunteer at an elderly home.
I know. After watching this, I'm like, you know what, though? When I watch this, this is kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about like, I would never want to date myself. I think that's why Lynette like hates her so much, because I feel like that's totally going to be Lynette when
she's old. That's going to be Lynette for sure.
Like she's like a bitter, she's going to be a bitter old lady like that. Yeah. Grouchy. And like, I don't know. I feel like they're super similar, and that's like part of why Lynette like can't stand being around her.
Yeah.
Because they both just are they're like the same.
Yeah. Mrs. McCloskey tries to guilt her too. It's like, well, you took my Tiffany's lamp. Like if you're not going to hang out with me. And Lynette's like, just take it back then. Yeah. Like, that's where they end up, and Lynette ends up feeling bad, and she sees the UPS guy come by, and he drops off a package. She's like, your neighbor hasn't answered or whatever, and Lynette's really worried because, like, Mrs. McCluskey's always home, and so she drops the package off and does, like, a what is it, a doorbell, something and dash. Like,
yeah, ding, wait.
I don't know. I know dine and dash, but.
Wait, no. Like, ding dong ditch?
Ding dong ditch.
Is that what it's called? Yeah, maybe. Oh my God, why is my brain, like, refusing to remember what that is? My brain
also, I'm like, is something wrong today? but she does that and, like, runs away, but then the package is still there at night and, like, the next day, and Lynette freaks out to Tom. And Tom is like, we'll go check on her. And she's like, but then I have to talk for 2 hours. And then she's like, but if you don't, she could be dead. And Tom's like, good luck figuring that out.
Like, yeah, Tom, like, and she's like, I really hate you right now. I'm like, Tom is so fucking annoying sometimes.
Yeah, and then Lynette breaks and enters into Mrs. McCluskey's house.
Classic Desperate Housewives move.
Yes, and she says, oh, I got a key from the person next door. And Mrs. McCluskey is just chilling, like, in her chair. Mm-hmm. She's like, I hoped that you wouldn't come in. I hoped you wouldn't come annoy me. Lynette asks her if she has anybody that could take care of her, a friend, a relative. And Mrs. McCluskey is a little stubborn and says, I'm fine and it's okay. But before you go, can you, like, open all my pill bottles and stuff? And she, like, reels for Lynette in. But then Lynette is a big person and offers just to help her anyway and says, tomorrow we're going to go to the pharmacy together.
Well, Lynette kind of gives this little speech about, like, obligations. Mm-hmm. And this is where I feel like they're similar. And, like, Lynette also can't just be nice about it. She's like, you're now my obligation, which is a nice gesture. But the way she delivers it is very Mrs. McCluskey. Like, that is totally how Mrs. McCluskey would handle a situation like that.
Yeah.
And you could tell, like, she almost likes it. I think they, like, her name's Karen, because of course it is.
Yeah.
I love that Karen, like, has, like, she likes that Lynette is a little biting. I think that she likes that part of Lynette, and that's why she almost like wants to be her friend.
Yeah.
But she just can't like bring herself to admit it. But I like that Lynette, you know, at the end of the day, she is a good person. She does the thing that she should do, which is help this old lady out, take her to the pharmacy once a week, whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
just chill.
It's funny because I lived with my grandma for a long time. And she was just like Mrs. McCluskey. Like, she had that attitude. She had the bad arthritis. I was always having to do shit like this. I had to take her to the pharmacy and all that fun stuff. And she would always be kind of a bitch about it. And I would always kind of be a bitch back. And it was like, that just was our back and forth. So this like, relationship always reminds me of that.
Because you, like, love the, like, my grandma's, like, in the other room. I'm, like, thinking about it. I'm, like, sometimes I get so fucking annoying. But you love them. Yeah, she says life is just one big obligation. So that's where they end up, and it's very heartwarming.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I don't hate Lynette this episode.
I don't hate Lynette either. I like I said, this is, like, one of her realer, I think we can all relate to this, like, having to deal with someone you might not want to deal with, but, you know, we all have to live together on this planet, you know?
Yeah, that's what they say at the end. We should treat each other nicely, I think.
Yeah.
The moral of the story there.
Do you do Gabby next?
Ooh, yeah, let's do a good Gabby.
I want to save Brie for the end because I have a lot to say about Brie.
Because my fuck, marry, kill is just...
Yeah, we're making y'all wait for it.
Because I don't want to get too turned on.
Gabby's wasn't that long either, honestly, this episode. So basically, like, her plot line opens up with her and Carlos. Like, Carlos is not sleeping in their bed right now. She has kicked him out of their bed because of the post-nup violence. Because
he's abusive.
Yeah, because he fucking abused her ass and made her sign a post-nup.
And he's sociopath and she doesn't know it yet, but he has switched her birth control bills.
Yeah. So basically Carlos finally, like, he, like, threatens her then. He's like, I'm going to cancel all your credit cards then and cancel all your money and you can't spend anything. And Gabby's just like, okay, well, like, what the fuck am I supposed to do then? Like, this is fucking insane. And then Carlos is like, well, once you treat me with respect, like, then maybe. And it's like, okay, well, you fucking grabbed her. You abused her.
Yeah,
like,
why don't you treat her with respect?
And so, like, that kind of ends, you know.
It pops off. He says, if you ever, she says, if you ever hurt me again, I'll kill you. And he says, if you ever leave me for another man, I'll kill you.
So then she's like, with all this passion, we should, and I was crazy, like, we're not having sex right now. I'm like, okay, if anything, I feel like that line should have been Carlos, because I don't know why Gabby would say it. It's weird.
I'm like, are you even attracted to him, Gabby?
Like, is she trying to have sex with him right now? Like, so then she's like with John, and he's like macking all over her. And this was, like, kind of a goofy scene because she's, like, thinking about what's happening. And he, like, says something. She's like, what did we – what's the rule? And he's like, stop pretending we have a future.
Okay. It was – I said that he said it in, like, a
– like a fucking tone puppy.
Of, yeah, the tone that you got punished by your mother when you were little.
Yeah.
And she said, what do you say? Please. He said it like that. He said, stop pretending we have a future. It was like, oh.
It was like cartoonish.
Yeah, it was terrible.
And then he like gives her his like school credit card to go shopping. And I think it's actually insane that Gabby accepted it. I was like, Gabby, are you on crack? Or like, okay, fine, accept it, because he was very insistent. But the fact that she uses it, I'm like,
yeah,
is she stupid?
I'm just like, what is happening here? I'm like, this is low. Yeah. This is like.
So Gabby, like, goes shopping with it.
Like, and standards are low, but these are, like, low.
No, this is weird. So then it's, like, when she accepted the ring, when he proposed. I'm like, why accept it at all? What are you doing? So she goes shopping with it, and she's like, I'll pay you back. So she goes shopping with it. She's, like, out to eat, and the card gets declined because, naturally, John's parents, that's a card that they have for him. They see all the spending, like, and they're, like,
his parents' credit card.
Yeah, they cancel that shit. And like, John had been trying to call her, and she, like, finally responds because she had her phone off because she was enjoying her lunch or whatever.
I've never turned my phone off.
Yeah, and he's like, we'll just return a pair of shoes. And she's, like, taken aback by that. I'm like,
yeah,
all right,
she's
Carrie.
Like, you're hysterical.
I was like, all right, Carrie. So then, like, she's at this, like, restaurant, and she, you know, does a typical hot girl move where she sees this lonely older man, and she gives him a fake name, and they have a lovely afternoon talking, and then he pays for the lunch, and the waiter's face when he pays for the lunch was really funny. I actually thought that. I liked
that
part.
she goes through with it, and they make eye contact, and she has a victorious face, I would say.
Yeah.
And that guy is just judging the shit out of her. But yeah. The old man just, like, I don't know. He basically wanted to spend more time with her. She's like, I'm in a relationship. But
he seems like a nice rich man. I'm like, you should just date him, Gabby.
I was like third character in this like triangle.
I'm like, get out of there, Gabby. Yeah. Like, get with this guy.
Fourth character in the square. Like, yeah. After that, she comes home and Carlos is watching football in the tub. He's watching the soccer game. And I noted the TV in the bathroom. I was just like,
I kind of want one. Low key, if I had a big bathtub like that and I was in there all the time.
I was like, luxury? Okay. It's but nice. She shows off her new shoes because Carlos basically ignores her like he always does, unless he wants sex or money or something. He then is whipped into alertness when he hears about the shoes. And Gabby's like, yeah, they're new. And you didn't want to know about them, so why should I tell you about them? Because he's like, what's up with this? And then she says, I just want to remind you that, like, I, like, don't need you for money.
She's like, I'm a pretty girl. I can find a guy to buy me fucking dinner.
Yeah. And I forgot how generous men can be. And I have options, and I have a whole lot of them. So get it together. And that's that. So I think that's where it kind of drops off, though.
We just get a last little, like, during Mary Alice's closing monologue, Carlos rips up the post-nup.
Yeah.
And so she lets him back in his bed.
But, yeah, she also has the line, I'm a pretty girl, and pretty girls are never lonely. And I was like,
I'm, like, sitting here, I'm like, I've been lonely a few times.
I know, I'm
does
like,
that mean I'm
ugly? Regularly like, am lonely.
I'm like, wait. I'm like, uh-oh.
This made me contemplate a lot of things. Yeah. So, okay, Gabby.
So, and lastly, we get Bree's story.
Camp Hennessy, starting off at Camp Hennessy.
This storyline was pretty crazy. Just for some little fun podcast history here, this storyline is based on Mark Cherry, his actual experience with his own mother.
No way.
Yes. So Bree is based on his mom.
Oh.
He, and knowing that, there is a little added context to it, which I think is good because this, like, Bree's actions can come across as fucking, I mean, they are awful.
Fair bananas.
Yeah.
But it's not abnormal. There's a lot of, like, stories like that with people.
And knowing that it's, like, kind of based on his own, and he and his mom are close now, so it's, like, they came around.
Yeah.
But it is, like, a very interesting, like, context, I think, to like know that the writer of the show, like, this is a very personal story for him.
Yeah.
And I think this is actually a very, anyway, we can just get into it. But I was really like, this good storyline.
Wow. I know. I love that background.
Yeah.
You're like, it's based on his personal experience after the hit and run, smoking pot, getting expelled.
I don't know about all that, but this part at least.
So they kick off at Camp Hennessy, and Rex thinks that they made him. Rex and Bree are arguing about taking Andrew out of the camp because that's what they're doing.
Yeah. And Bree's like, well, there's 200 boys here and he might be gay, so we need to get him out of here.
It's like,
I guess he'll just be fucking.
Yeah, I guess
all
because if you just see too many men, you eventually just like are super gay. Like, I don't know what she thinks is gonna happen.
No, I think he thinks he might be gay. So she's so desperate for him to not be gay that she's like, can't trust him around other boys now.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was confused about that because she doesn't really go into it because she's like, I'm not going to like say what I think is going to happen. So they take him home and they say that we're going to get him home. We're going to get him to Christian counseling so it doesn't become a lifestyle. I noted that phrasing and I was like, oh my God. And then they were like, whatever's going on, we still love him. And they kind of argue about that because Rex is like, do you really like need to say that? Like, obviously you still love him. And so Andrew's looking like pretty cool as he comes out with his little bag and they head on home.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have a dinner. Andrew comes down to dinner and he's like, Danielle's not here, so why are there four chairs? And then cue the Reverend walking in.
Yeah.
And at the dinner, I mean, Andrew knows what's up immediately and he's like, kill me. And there's like a bottle of wine. He's like, can I have some of that? And Rex is like, no, I will need that. So yep. Rex is being really cool dad about this. Rex is not really being, like, anal. Like, he seems, like, cool that his son is gay.
I mean, Rex has the line where he basically says, like, he disagrees with Bree. He's like, I just want our son to be happy. Like,
yeah.
What does he say?
How is Rex cooler than Bree? Like, we are 19 episodes in, and I'm like, we hated Rex so much at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rex does a 180, but I think Rex has always been more, like, I mean, just look at what he likes to do sexually. I think he's just more open.
He's a little bit chill.
But,
yeah.
But he says, as far as I'm concerned, if Andrew is happy with who he is, like, he says, like, we should support him, basically.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, pretty woke.
Because the conversation with the Reverend doesn't go as well as, like, Bree plans it.
Well, because she, like, tells Andrew, like, basically there's, like, telling Andrew, like, you need to change. And the Reverend is straight up basically promoting, like, conversion camp.
Yeah.
Like therapy.
Well, he said, okay, Andrew is like, I'm not confused. I like know who I am. And the Reverend, I thought was cool. He said, if you ever want to talk about it, my door is open, but like, I can't force you on the path of righteousness.
Yeah.
So they like leave it there. And Bree is like, what the fuck?
Like, she's fucking pissed that the Reverend's not forcing her son to be straight.
Yeah.
I don't really understand.
And she says, it's not gay, it's sodomy. And like, Rex is like, so you're going to call her like son a sodomite before dessert or something.
Yeah.
Like, it just was like fucked up. And then Bree gets pissed. She says, your dad likes BDSM. So
no wonder you're a little deviant or whatever.
Yeah,
the fuck
no
she
wonder
says.
You're like this. And then she like storms out and it's just, I don't, obviously didn't go well, but Andrew's like, whatever. Andrew's like, my parents are crazy.
Yeah.
And then next thing we know, Andrew's literally just trying to chill is what I said. He has a sandwich and he's like walking to his room and Bree is like, come over here. I'm looking at baby pictures. And I'm like, no. Like, you knew what you're getting into in that situation. And she's like, look at this one. You are, like, so cute. Like, I just love you so much. When I gave birth to you, she tells a story about, like, her birth and, like,
how she almost gave up her own life to make sure he was okay.
Oh, my God. It's a victim complex. Yeah. And he's... this had me cracking up. She tells this story and Andrew's like, I'm going to go eat my sandwich now.
No, she literally tells him she's worried he's going to go to hell.
Yeah. And so he's like, I'm just trying to eat the sandwich. And then she's like, I need you to be straight because I'm going to go to heaven and like, you won't go to heaven and I can't be in heaven without you. And she's like nearly in tears. She's like, I would be so lonely without you in heaven. And I am just like,
well, and this is so sad because it shows like, no offense to all of our religious listeners out there, but there's a type of brainwashing that I think happens because this isn't Bree being like homophobic for the sake of it. She's like genuinely scared because she has been taught her entire life that gay people go to hell.
Yeah.
She's not acting like this because she hates gay people.
No.
She's acting this way because she genuinely believes, after years and years of indoctrination, that he's going to go to hell because he's gay, which is also sad in itself.
It's like, super sad. And I'm not a religious person. I was never raised religious. So for me, I didn't read it as it is homophobic, like, be saying these things to your son who's gay. Yeah. And like, but you see that Bree's, like, interior reasons, like, are religiously based, because this is her belief system.
Like, I mean, it's not just her belief system, though. It's like, she was raised to, like, since she was a child, she has been told repeatedly that this is, like, if you sin and you don't accept Jesus, you go to hell.
Like, if you fully believe in heaven and you fully believe in hell, I could see how this is very frightening to you. But, like, as a person who doesn't, it's just,
I grew up religious, and I saw a lot of people that, I mean, I was raised to think this way by my church.
Yeah.
And that's what's fucked up, is, like, I know so many people like Bree.
Yeah.
That have this view because of this reason. And it's so fucking, it's sad. I wish, but you know what? That just shows how much of our population genuinely is just like a sheep, like a, I hate that term.
You're like, they're sheep.
Yeah, but like, no, like, you're raised a certain way, and then you don't question it, and now all of a sudden you have all these bigoted beliefs because you just, like, don't even try to get outside your bubble. And that's what it looks like Bree has done.
Well, I just don't even feel like she's trying. Like, so, I'm like, I don't know, it's hard for me too. I'm like going on a WeHo every weekend. I'm like, does she not know another gay person? Like,
it's just bizarre. Like,
only her son.
But she probably doesn't. Like, that's the thing, though. She's super conservative, super religious. She surrounds herself with people like that.
Yeah.
It's probably not that crazy.
Because I'm like, she's just not even trying to understand his perspective or his feelings, or, like, I don't know. I feel like you should have a million questions. You shouldn't be like, it's wrong. Like, but this is where Bree's at, and Andrew reacts. You see him have a certain expression on his face as they hug while Bree is crying about him going to hell, basically. And we catch up with Andrew at the church, and he's taking an oath with the reverend.
Mm-hmm.
He tells the reverend that he lied to his parents. I'm not gay. And this reverend's like, I'm not buying it. Like, you're gay. He said, all I know is that I wanted to get out of Camp Hennessy. So I lied to my parents, and it worked because they're tools. Mm-hmm. And the pastor is still not buying it. He's like, nah, you're gay. And he says, let me put it this way. I like vanilla ice cream, but every now and then I'm in the mood for chocolate. I'm like,
so he's bisexual. Yeah.
The reverend's like, yeah, but God wants you to like vanilla. So that's what's up. And he says, I don't believe in God. He says, your mom will be so disappointed. She's been praying for you so hard. And Andrew's like, I'll change big time. And I love that line, his delivery of it. And he says, my mom said she doesn't think I'm going to heaven. When she said that, it hit me how I'm going to get back at her. From now on, I'm going to be so good. Like, eat my vegetables, going to get good grades. And then one day, when she least expects it, I'm going to do something that will rock her world. And I mean, I'm going to destroy her.
Yep.
And I was so turned on. I was
like, damn it, Julia. Damn it.
And I was like, I love how evil Andrew is. And he says, when that day comes, trust me, I'll know paradise. And the reverend's like, OMG. Like, the reverend is silent.
The reverend's sitting there like, I hate that I'm a reverend right now, because now I am saddled with this psychotic information.
And then Andrew, like, gets up to go, and he has the Bible, and he's like, ugh, this. And he, like, tosses it over the reverend.
Oh, my God.
And then I said, Andrew is the love of my life.
Uh-oh.
I am obsessed with this. Monologue was crazy. This was evil and insidious. And, like, I can't wait.
I mean, it was everything a parent is terrified of. Everything.
Everything.
Awful.
I mean, I wouldn't want a parent in Andrew, but, like, I would love to date an Andrew.
So while we're here, then, are you going to keep your fuck, marry, kill as all three being Andrew?
Yeah. Okay. I fuck Andrew because that was a really hot monologue. His delivery was great. I liked just everything. Like, his face as he said it. Like, the planning that went into it. It was all hot. I'm going to marry him because I like the planning of it, for sure.
Okay.
I like that he is a good liar. I like that we're both not religious at this point.
You're like, I like that he's a good liar.
Yeah.
What?
I like that we're both not religious at this point.
Yeah.
I think that it would be like a Bonnie and Clyde. Like, we would live a wild life. We would live a wild lifestyle together. And then I would kill him because it was so evil.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have to kill him at the end. You do have to kill him.
Oh, yeah. That's the only reason I would fuck and marry him at this point is because I would kill him at the end. So I'll all three. He takes my cake.
Okay. I'm going to have to marry, and this is going to be crazy. I'm going to marry Rex. I'm going to come one full 180 on my opinions on Rex.
Yeah, because we fucked Rex once, but I don't know that we've ever married him.
I'm going to marry Rex this time because I liked how accepting he is of the gay situations. A nice surprise from good old Rex. Man, I guess I'll probably fucking kill Andrew as well.
You would fuck and kill Andrew?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I don't think I'd marry him.
Why do you fuck him? I wasn't expecting him to be your fuck.
Because, like, I like how in control of the situation he is. That's hot.
It's pretty hot.
I don't like what he's doing, though, so I'll have to kill him to hide my shame for fucking him. Because that's embarrassing. But, but yeah. No, I'll agree with those two. But I have to marry Rex because that was daddy behavior right there. Oh my God, good behavior.
That's what it was. It was just very, like, oof on the nose.
Yeah.
I also think we had an ending before. I mean, we were just excited now that we finished. But Mary Alice Young had a monologue at the end. So life's a journey. One much better traveled with companion by her side. The companion can be just about anyone. That doesn't give me hope. A neighbor on the other side of the street or a man on the other side of the bed. The companion can be a mother with good intentions or a child who is up to no good. Despite our best intentions, some of us will lose our companions along the way, and then the journey becomes unbearable. Human beings are designed for many things, but loneliness isn't one of them.
Yeah.
So, all in all, that rounds out the episode and our fuck, marry, kills. And then the housewife or the hubby of the week, I might have to nominate Rex.
I was about to nominate Rex, too.
Like,
because I have to say, that was a really surprising move from him, and I'm very impressed. It's very forward thinking.
I am really surprised by it.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it. I thought both of them were going to be anal and weird about it. Yeah, but me too.
I forgot that Rex actually is not an asshole in that scene.
Dang. I have a question. Maybe it's too. Is Rex an asshole later on? He goes back to being an asshole. Maybe.
I can't tell you.
Okay. Dang.
Oh, man, I want to tell you, but I can't.
But this just confirms, because like one of the episodes, a couple episodes ago, you were like, Rex gets better, or not Rex, Andrew gets better and then he gets worse and you'll see. And I'm like, is this the beginning of a wild roller coaster?
He does. Oh, man. I remember vividly what he ends up doing, and it's,
I can't wait.
It's worse than you can imagine.
Because this was,
I don't think you could guess it if you tried.
Yeah, all right, I'm ready. But yeah, Rex can be our hubby of the week because he was very cool and supportive of his gay son.
Yeah.
That we didn't expect. And then,
pleasant surprise.
Do you have your Apple rating?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
3.75.
What the fuck? Why do you keep... Lately, our ratings have not been on the money together.
3.75?
Yeah. We didn't have Edie.
Okay.
I really get bummed out when we don't have Edie. Not having Edie, I didn't like. I don't think Susan had too much to do in this episode. It was more of like a Sophie storyline than anything.
Yeah.
I did really like the other three wives. I think they all had good storylines. But I don't know. I could have used maybe a little less. Like, I didn't really care. I liked the scene with Mike getting beat up by the cop. I was like,
this just
felt boring.
For me, I was like, oh my God. Like,
I wanted more of like Mike doing some digging.
Yeah.
And less of like, we get it, he's gonna get the stuff from the cop. I don't know. Like, I feel like we spent a little too much time with Mike without a lot of actual movement happening.
Okay, that's a good review. I enjoyed the action scene of Mike getting the shit beat out of him. because it just felt like new and interesting to me. It's something that hasn't happened yet.
It added some stakes.
Yeah. I also like that we found out what happened to Deidre with the toy chest. There was like the circle is complete there almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I did like Susan's storyline, even though it was heavily Sophie driven. I thought she shined in her monologue. I really related to that when she's like, I am devastated, and like healing. Like, seeing the different depictions of healing after losing somebody you care about a lot.
Yeah.
Or through a breakup, not, like, death. But it's just, like, I related to that because I'm, like, a slow healer. And then I liked Lynette because I love elderly people and lived with my grandma forever. So that was very nice to me. The one that I didn't, I mean, I even liked Gabby's storyline a bit because I felt like Gabby was regaining a bit of control. It wasn't even something that annoyed me, even though it was low standards to take a child's credit card.
I think I was just like annoyed with that part. Like I would have been less annoyed if Gabby's storyline was that she hustled like rich random men to get what she wanted. But I didn't like that it was like John's credit card.
18-year-old. Yeah. Like 18-year-old money.
I don't know. I just wasn't super, I didn't love that. I also don't love that she's fucking him again.
I don't
get it. I'm like, are you in love with him or not? Because at this point, like, you're just being a dick.
I don't love it, but I don't hate it. But you're right. She could find another man, an actual man that's not 18. Well, not like, barely legal.
I don't know. It's like she claims she cares about John. I'm like, then why would you do this? Like, he clearly is, like, in love with you. Like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah.
That's just mean. But I don't think it's as mean to hustle, like, a super rich guy.
Yeah.
But John's not super rich.
Yeah, he's got a business mowing lawns.
Yeah.
I'm like, do you?
He's growing his, he might get the golf course.
Ew. I mean,
good for
entrepreneurial
him, I guess.
Spirit, I guess. Yeah. Not jaded at all.
Yeah.
So, wow. I loved this episode, as you can
tell. I thought it was really good. I just didn't, it wasn't like.
It wasn't your episode. It was cool. That's where we're at. We'd love to hear your ratings.
Mm-hmm.
We are watching season one, episode 20 next week.
We're powering through.
We're almost done with the first season, you guys.
We really are.
And if you made it to this point, you're a true fan. We appreciate you.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because we have, it's been a good ride. We started this with like low to no expectations. And mm-hmm. we have connected with a lot of people. And we have a lot of listeners across the world. And we're just happy that you're with us enjoying Desperate Housewives.
Yep.
It's been so fun for me to watch it for the first time and watch it with my best friend. So
yeah.
Keep tuning in. Keep throwing us suggestions. If you rate and review, give us a little comment and like feedback. We love that.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't wait to watch next week's episode.
No, can't wait.
But as always, know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.